It's time for Let's Talk Legal with your host, Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins from the law firm of Harvell & Collins. If you've got a legal question, they can give you the answer. Call now, 1-800-818-2255, and Let's Talk Legal.
And we have joining us here in the studio this morning, well, Cecil Harvell has been a regular. Wes Collins is back.
Yeah.
Good morning to you.
Yeah, I've been out, had a little back issue, but I'm on the mend, doing well.
Well,
good to be back.
Well, welcome back. You're sitting gently, being very cautious with that back.
Yeah, that's right. I had a little procedure done at East Carolina, and they did a great job, and I'm all healed up and just all have right. to be – I'm a little fragile, but I'm strong enough to continue to practice law just fine.
Outstanding. Well, good morning to you.
Good morning, Lockwood. You know, Lockwood, last week you and I discussed fiduciary liability, that huge word fiduciary, which as we've talked about is really a fiduciary, excuse me, it's kind of like Roman numeral one. And then under Roman numeral one is executor, mm-hmm. agent under power of attorney, trustee, guardian. All of these folks are fiduciaries. And fiduciaries are people or entities that hold resources on behalf of another. They are not really, it is not the resources of that particular person. You know, the executor doesn't own all of the assets,
right.
or the agent of the power of attorney doesn't own all of the assets. They're in control of the assets that have been given to them under a fiduciary relationship and for the benefit of another. And as a result of this, the law has defined over the course of many, many years the duties and responsibilities and the standard of care of the fiduciary. And so that is what we are talking about. It's not an easy job, and with it comes discretion.
Right.
And it's in those gray areas of discretion
right.
that we have many times we see there to be conflicts. One of the things that Wes and I talked about out in the hallway before coming in this morning is, you know, that the idea of a fiduciary making gifts. And this usually occurs, Wes, in a power of attorney, right?
That's correct. You know, a lot of our cases in North Carolina dealing with this breach of fiduciary duty involving a power of attorney involve issues of the agent, the person who's the attorney, in fact, for the principal making transfers of assets to him or herself.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we of course have other cases where, you know, there are certain transfers that are being made that have been brought into question, but it just seems that more of the cases end up, being tried and going up to the Court of Appeals on these issues of basically gifting to yourself,
mm-hmm.
those type things. Our statutes in North Carolina under 32A, that's the section, have limitations with regard to gifting in them built into the statute, where if you have a power of attorney and the power of attorney does not have gifting power in it, meaning it doesn't have a language in it that allows uncompensated transfers to take place, then those type of transfers are void if there's no compensation given for the transfer. So basically, to put that in a nutshell, if you're going to gift an asset, if you're going to give anything to yourself or to anyone else for that matter, using a power of attorney, and you don't have language in that power of attorney to do so, then in the event that that transfer is challenged, then it will be set aside by the court. Okay? And obviously that makes sense. You know, we're in a position where if we think that the principal or the principal does really want to give this authority to gift, well, you got to spell it out in your power of attorney. Now, sometimes that gets confused because in powers of attorney, Lockwood, many cases, you have pretty broad general language such as, I give my attorney, in fact, the right to deal with all banking transactions.
Right.
All financial transactions. All real estate transactions. Now, that kind of sounds like to the average person on the street, anything you want to
exactly.
do.
Exactly. So
right.
the absence of the word gift.
That's right. Yep. You have to have language in the power of attorney that gives the authority and the power to the attorney, in fact, to gift. And oftentimes, if you have that language with regard to the right to gift, you also see coupled language with that indicating that the attorney, in fact, may also gift to himself.
Okay.
All right. So that's language we normally see. Now, other language that we look at as it relates to gifting is sometimes we have language that kind of reverts back to standard estate planning and the annual gift tax exclusion. And Cecil can talk about that a little bit. That falls right within his wheelhouse.
Well, you know, Lockwood, the question that the listeners are saying is, well, gosh, you know, why do I, in their power of attorney, start gifting?
Right.
You know, why are y'all talking about gifting?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, powers of attorney are about paying my bills,
right.
You know, filing my tax return, doing it, paying the real estate, the ad valorem taxes, and keeping up with my assets and making sure that all of my bills are paid and my taxes are paid. And that's absolutely true. But there is no question, Lockwood, that in the area of prudent estate planning and in the area of comprehensive estate planning, many folks, as they get older, will gift for a variety of reasons. Sometimes it is just simply that they are ready to kind of begin to let go of some of their net worth to their children, to, of course, those beloved grandchildren who are going to go to college someday,
right.
And they want to set up some funds for their grandchildren so that they have the opportunity of a good education. Sometimes there is gifting relative to following through on the asset protection planning that we do. You know, we talk about that a lot here at the program, that there are certain things that Wes and I do on an everyday basis to protect assets from the devastating long-term cost of a nursing home.
Right.
And of course, then the son or daughter under the power of attorney have to come in and kind of finish the duty there, okay, in terms of usually working with the money side or the liquid side of their parents' portfolio and making certain transfers so as to try to protect that money. So there are reasonable and customary reasons why an agent under a power of attorney would gift. Just to gift for the sake of just giving your principal's money away is probably a breach of fiduciary duty, as you know, the topic of today's program. I mean, why are you gifting? That question has to be asked, okay? Is it to accomplish one of these other goals? Is it because the principal has directed that you set up trust for the grandchildren or gift to each of the children, you being one of them, and you having a couple of brothers and sisters, and your mom and dad or grandmom or granddad says, I want all of the members of the family now to have, you know, a gift.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to find that reason to gift. You know, and as a fiduciary, you can't just arbitrarily start gifting out monies, you know, for, because you're the agent of the principal. And I would never advise, you know, an agent to just start gifting arbitrarily. It needs to be done with some sort of pattern and consistent with their estate goals, their asset protection goals, something of that nature. We need to hang our hat on.
And just this goes back to one of the challenges of being identified as the fiduciary is that issue of liability.
That's right. And I think it's very important, too, to make it clear that just because a power of attorney has gifting powers in it, that doesn't work as a defense also for the person who's doing the gifting. For example, if the power of attorney gives you the right to make any gift you want to make, you can give to yourself. You can do whatever you want to as it relates to gifting, or that's what it seems to say.
Uh-huh.
You still have a duty to act in the best interest of the principal, and you still have a duty to avoid self-dealing. So when I say it doesn't act as a defense, what I mean is that just because the power of attorney says you have the right to gift and I've given you that right, that doesn't mean that you can gift mom and dad's house, their bank account, everything to yourself and say, well, the power of attorney allows me to do everything and I have no liability. It doesn't work that way. You still have a duty to act for the principal, not for yourself. Are you following that?
I am.
There we go.
And here's the other interesting aspect of this. This goes back to what we talked about several months back. The clarity of setting up that will. and setting up the documents for this. And what intrigues me is you said earlier that the power of attorney gives you all authority over over all the funding. But if the word gifting is not there.
Right. You don't have the right to gift. You may try to gift, but in the event it's challenged, then it would be found by
Well,
by
Lockwood,
court.
We've just talked about this over and over and over again, and we're so enjoying you kind of being here for a period of time. But, you know, Lockwood, we see this with the language and a power of attorney consistent throughout the power of attorney. For instance, what I'm saying, the language in a power of attorney has to be very specific. Very specific. A stock company is not going to want transfers unless they see their magic transfer assign language. Each financial institution many times has its own specialized language that it likes to see. These generic grants of power of attorney that Wes was talking about before, I give you the right to deal with all my banking, all my real estate, pay all my bills. That's really not going to cut the mustard many, many times.
Right.
Okay. The powers of attorney have to be very specifically tailored with specific language so as to overcome the hurdle of the person who's relying on the power of attorney really questioning, do you really have the authority to do this particular thing? We understand that it says you have authority to do everything about our real estate, but does that include you have the right to put an equity line on the house? Not real sure that's what that means. Or that you have the right to lease the house. Or you even have the right to sell the house. You have the right to deal with the real estate, but not to sell it. I mean, again, the language in a power of attorney needs to be very specific. The power of attorney is a document that Wes and I and every member of our office staff, the professional staff, the lawyers, we are constantly tweaking that document, Lockwood. There will be a case to come down from the court, from the North Carolina Court of Appeals or Supreme Court, a revenue ruling, an Internal Revenue Service guideline ruling, and we will change the terminology of that document to keep it right, to keep it completely up to date with the then current law. Some of our other documents, like, say, a declaration of desire for natural death, you know, this document doesn't really change. There's not a lot of authorship liberty with the attorney. It's a document that's more or less promulgated by the legislature. It is the law. There's the document. The power of attorney is different. It's kind of like a last will and testament. It absolutely can say anything that you want it to say, and it can be very tailored.
All right. We're talking with Harvell and Collins. We're talking, of course, with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins here on Coastal Daybreak on the talk station. By the way, if you would like to call in, you can. I've never even mentioned that. This is a particularly sensitive issue because of the liabilities I'm cognizant of as fiduciary responsibility. 800-818-2255, 910-353-4674, and 252, area code 247-7282. Or you can call their office. I'll give you that number here in just a moment, but you're listening to Coastal Daybreak. We're talking about fiduciary responsibility. We were chatting briefly about that off air, and It is a very responsible position, and of course we're talking with Wes Collins and Cecil Harvell of Harvell and Collins. By the way, the right advice at the right time, and I'm going to give you the phone number very quickly, 252 area code 726-9050, 726-9050. All right, back to that issue.
Well, when we look at, you know, the responsibility of the agent, the attorney in fact, and we look at, you know, what they may have to answer for in using the power of attorney.
When you say the word attorney in fact,
right,
that means the individual that is the fiduciary. It doesn't mean that they are a licensed attorney.
Correct, yeah.
Okay.
That means it could be, you know, mom and dad appoint their son as their agent under the power of attorney, or their daughter, or whomever, you know, it might be. So if transactions that this son or this daughter, this agent has engaged in come into question, such as we were talking about, transfers of assets, gifts, those kind of things, then in North Carolina, there's a burden shifting, okay? And that's a little bit complicated. I know that the average listener's not going to know what in the world I'm talking about, so let me just try to make that simple. Basically, what that means is that if you are sued, brought into court to answer for these transactions that are questionable normally is the plaintiff who has the burden of proof, who has to prove that whatever they say the defendant did was a breach of some law, okay, a violation of some law. But in a breach of fiduciary duty claim or a constructive fraud claim, when we're talking about, okay, we think that this transaction that you undertook was a breach of your duty under the power of attorney, the burden shifts to the defendant in North Carolina for the defendant to basically then prove that what I did was authorized, it was what the principal wanted, it was not self-dealing, and there's a presumption, meaning we start where we go ahead and assume that what you did, if you transferred an asset to yourself, was a breach of fiduciary duty. So you have somewhat of an uphill climb in the event you're going to deal and you're going to engage in any kind of gifts to yourself if you're brought into court to answer for those. So what are the things that we're looking at? Right. Well, we're hoping that this is done for some prudent estate planning purpose. Mm-hmm. We're hoping that a lawyer was involved to help you do this, to help maybe preserve mom and dad's assets. We certainly hope that you're not off surreptitiously and quietly transferring the house to yourself and not telling anybody. You know, because it's going to be hard to prove that that was in the best interest of the principal and it was not a breach of fiduciary duty.
And Lockwood, we just have a minute or two, but this is really a fascinating little area that we landed on right here at this moment. Let's talk about it for a minute. I mean, Wes is explaining that we all know, all our listeners know, that when you're the plaintiff, you're alleging a certain thing, a breach of contract, breach mm-hmm. of fiduciary duty, et cetera, et cetera. And it's your burden to carry that case.
Right.
To show the court, yes, there was a breach of fiduciary duty. Yes, there was a breach of contract. But yet Wes is saying that the burden shifts in these kinds of cases, fiduciary law cases, to the fiduciary. And there is a presumption, first of all, that the fiduciary erred. And the fiduciary has the burden to show that they did not
wow.
err. Now, Lockwood, that just simply goes back to what we started. Why? Why is that? That's because of what we talked about at the very initiation of this topic. You know, the importance of one's responsibility when they are holding property for another. And the law is going to hold that person very accountable. Because after all, that's not your money. Those aren't your assets. Those are the assets of another. And so therefore we see the law following through in this very practical way, this burden shifting, as Wes calls it, to support that proposition.
Let's Talk Legal with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. We'll wrap things up here in just a moment. We're talking about fiduciary responsibility with about a minute and a half there to go. 3 minutes, no, here with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins. And continue on.
Yeah, I'll tell you, you know, it's an interesting situation because, you know, in most cases, when we're dealing with an issue where maybe someone has breached their fiduciary duty, maybe for their parent, mm-hmm. the parent's usually in their 80s, maybe even their 90s. And maybe it's another sibling that's bringing them to us. And maybe we don't have the full story. We don't have all the information. Why? Because our clients are in their 80s or 90s and can't necessarily put their finger on exactly where their money went.
Right.
And then we get to the question of the statute of limitations. The breach of fiduciary duty statute of limitations is 3 years oh. from the day that you knew or should have known. So the first defense that any agent is going to raise is that, well, mom or dad knew about this back 5 years ago, and it's outside the statute of limitations. So sometimes we find ourselves in a position with our clients who are elderly, who are not the best historians, therefore they just can't mm-hmm. give us all the information yet. We're frustrated to a certain degree about getting bank records because, believe me, it's a little harder to get bank records now than it used to be 10 years ago. I mean, you've got to jump through hoops. Sometimes it takes a month. Sometimes it takes longer than that. Sometimes the bank doesn't give you everything that you ask for. You know, there's frustration there. So sometimes you're having to file a lawsuit pretty quickly because we're worried about the 3-year statute of limitations when we don't have the full story yet. okay? And then we develop the story through the discovery of the case. But this burden shifting issue, as we were just talking about, you know, is designed to protect those principals and the principals who signed the power of attorney against people who are going to go, you know, so far as to self-deal and to give to themselves.
It's also, in some instances, also protecting the other members of the family.
Yeah, no question about that. You know, and another thing that we would look at in a case like that would be, you know, let's say that there was a transfer of a significant transfer of an asset that really upset the estate plan of the person who is in their 80s or 90s. Well, let's look at their estate plan. Let's look at their will. Let's see if they wanted to leave all their assets equally to their kids, or maybe they did want to leave more to this one child who's gifted to himself or herself. And in the event that, you know, the estate plan is we're leaving everything equally, then that raises even more of a question about this transfer that took place of the house or significant amount of money or even a vehicle or something like that.
Okay. I'm going to encapsulate the answer to this. Good estate planning.
Absolutely.
Would you agree to that? I mean, this is in order to, if not avoid it altogether, ameliorate, probably eliminate potential pitfalls. Good estate planning, good power of attorney.
Absolutely, because the estate planning will support in the documentation the fact that it was anticipated that these certain gifts might occur or transfers of property would occur. Absolutely.
Okay, that's Harvell and Collins. By the way, the phone number 726-9050 or online at